Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Snoop Doggy Adam. Adam, how are you, sir?
Snoop Doggy Adam. So we are going to continue the tradition of assigning me a different 2000s rap name in each episode.
That's the plan. You know, last episode, I got to apologize, man. I listened back to it. I was so off my game, like even more so than usual. I was in the third day of a fast / cleanse, and I just, my brain was not firing on all cylinders. Not like, yeah, usually it fires on like 50% cylinder. It was like maybe 10% cylinders last episode. So I completely forgot we were doing the rap thing.
Your fast made you slow, for sure, on the last one.
Are we going to introduce like dad joke of the week? Is that a new segment that you're suggesting?
Sure. I don't know if I'll remember it for next time. Like you remembered to give me a rap name, but we can give it a shot.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that it will continue. At some point, I'm going to run out of my rap repertoire, but it's, for now, it's good. So this episode, I don't know if certainly the folks watching, but the folks listening wouldn't know this, but we don't have a guest this week. We're going to try something a little different. I want to sort of have a therapy session. You know, we say this show is part masterclass, it's part love letter to the industry, but it's also part therapy session. And so today, like I'm trying to stress test some thoughts that I'm having, and I'm having a lot of thoughts, some existential crisis around the future of DMOs. And you and I mean, full disclosure, have not had this conversation before. This is, we're coming in completely open. I've had this conversation with a couple of other folks here and there, but
I'm hurt. You've spoken to other people about this before me.
Yeah, I cheated on you. Sorry.
Painful.
I did say it's a therapy session, so expect some pain. But I haven't really gone into depth, and I'm trying to formulate my thoughts into something a little more coherent. And I'm excited about it. But because of this, I'm also going to call an audible and say Stu's News, the greatest segment in all of entertainment, is going to be towards the end of the episode, because it's going to sort of tie into what we're talking about, and you'll see what I mean by that. So you ready to jump in, Adam?
Let's do it. I'm in.
And you have no idea what's coming next, right?
I'm as curious as I've ever been on this show.
Oh, wow. We put mystery and intrigue at the front so that people tune in and stay alive. Yeah. I don't know what the title of this episode is going to be. So by the time it's published, obviously we will, but we'll have to try to figure that out as we go.
You got to come in and hit me blind with some ideas, mm-hmm. which means I feel like I should be able to name the episode after we go through the conversation.
That sounds like something we should do. That definitely does. Maybe. I'm not going to commit to that, but I'm open to suggestions. How about that?
I like, man, you're like Trump with the tariffs right now.
Oh, too soon. All right, so where should I start? Let me start with why I'm thinking this way, right? So there's a few things that are happening in the world, you know, in addition to tariffs, that are different, right? And I think some of that is consumer behavior shifting, like how we consume media, what our attention span is, how we plan travel. Like a lot of that is shifting. And a lot of that is, you know, there's two forces that are creating these changes, right? One is social media, and I think an evolution towards whether that's short form video or just instant gratification, dopamine hit kind of consumption of content, in reduced attention span. But the other is obviously AI and the technology shifts that are happening. And I think both of these sort of happening at the same time are complementary, but also they exacerbate and accelerate where my concerns are. And where my concerns are is what is the role of a DMO from a promotion perspective? Now, we've talked in the show a lot about other aspects. We're not just, you know, we've got an episode actually coming up next week where we're going to be talking about that in a little more depth about what is the full role. We talked last week about, or 2 weeks ago, about that too. Like, we're not just a marketing agency. But today I want to focus on that role as the promotional engine for a destination. Like, what is our role right now? You know, we serve ads, right? We send those ads often to a place, typically a website, although sometimes a social platform. So we inspire we're in the consideration set. Some DMOs are in the booking, but the conversion, but not many, right? But if we think about how we do that today, let's start at the top of the funnel, right? The awareness and into the consideration. There was a report that came out recently, and it talked about how many ad impressions there are right now, programmatic ad impressions, and it was in the trillions per day, right? And someone did the math on this and said, this can't be right. Like this doesn't make sense because every human being alive, and that means literally every human on the planet Earth, knowing that a good chunk of them don't have access to the internet, every person would have to be consuming thousands of ads every day, right? And that's just anecdotally doesn't seem right, right? On average, right? So I think we're facing a cliff of certain types of paid media. I think being able to reach enough consumers through the current economics of paid media is potentially going to collapse. Certainly programmatic, especially if people aren't using websites to get information. They're shifting to things like live chats and conversational LLMs, right? Does that check out? You understand where I'm going with that?
Absolutely.
Okay. So how we engage an audience right now, at some point, I think there's a cliff that we've got to adjust to ahead of time. We talked before about, on the old media stuff, about how consumers' expectations have shifted a lot, how they don't really want to be advertised to, who they trust and who they listen to is evolved a lot, right? And they certainly are more discerning than they've ever been.
Yeah.
So even if we can reach them, what message we give them has to evolve, right? And then where we send them and have that conversation, right now, what we call a website, like I don't see 5 years from now a DMO website, although some would argue that a DMO website already is irrelevant, I think some do that better than others. There's certainly not a place for a static brochure website 5 years from now. Like consumers' behavior and expectations have going to change so much, right? I'm already seeing my behavior change. I'm spending more time in conversation with AI than I am searching on Google and perusing websites. And I'm even at the point where I'll drop a link to a website into an LLM and ask it questions, right? Versus having to
Yep.
read all of the emails. And I get I'm a like sort of tip of the spear, bleeding edge kind of a technologist, but I don't think it's going to take long for the rest of the world to catch up. And I'm seeing things like, people on my team who aren't the most tech savvy people in our organization have begun to fully adopt AI in their work, day-to-day workflow. My wife, who is the director of a preschool, is not a technology person at all. Typically, if you think of the bell curve of adoption, I'm at the fringe, she's at the back, she's at the tail, right? And she's using AI to do a lot. And I understand that part of that's me as an influence, right? I've encouraged her to do it, but her cohorts are too. So I think, and we can talk about this in more detail in a little while, but I think the website experience is going to be very, very different 5 years from now than it is today, right? So what do we do about all this, right? So this is literally keeping me up awake, keeping me up at night a little bit. It's like what everything we do today is going to look very different 5 years from now. It's going to look very different a year from now. Should look very different 6 months from now. So the framework I've typically adopted in my life is I sort of think through likely outcomes. I think through what isn't going to change. And then I start to place bets in different areas. So what I don't want to talk about today is where I think things are going to change, where I think they're not going to change, and where I'm beginning to place bets for Myrtle Beach.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
And I want you to play along with me and the audience at home too, like leave in the comments what you think. So we've already sort of talked about some of the things that are going to change, right?
Well,
Like,
can I stop you real quick and just make sure that we have clarity on the problem, right? Because I want to sum up kind of what you've gone over the last several minutes, 25, 30 minutes, however long that
Yeah,
was.
droned on. You can say it.
No, but so media landscape is changing. Consumer behavior is changing, technology is changing, And it's changing at such a rapid rate that there is no crystal clear solution on where to go from here and how to solve that problem immediately. And so you're asking, okay, if we're looking at all the possible outcomes here, what do we need to be doing right now so that we're not behind when the dust settles on all this rapid change that's happening right now?
Yeah, and it like if we sort of go to the extreme, like the most aggressive version of that truth, the reality is the media landscape could be completely gone in its current form. Not just changing, it could be completely replaced. The website experience, the consumer research process that they currently go through could be completely disrupted. Like it's not an evolution, it could be a revolution here, really, in very short order. Right. And so how do we not just keep up with pace, but I'm also a big fan of the Wayne Gretzky, the skate to where the puck's going to be. And usually we can do that because we have some confidence in the trajectory of things, and we can draw a line from where we are and the trajectory to where it's probably going to go. But I think for the first time in my career, there's more uncertainty than I've ever seen before, right? Because we just This, a lot of this is being invented, right? It doesn't exist. What a website looks like 5 years from now, I don't think exists yet. I think we're beginning to see people start to form and create that. So, what could that look like, and how can we hedge our bets a little bit to make sure we're relevant? The DMOs still have a place, because I do believe they do. I want to talk a little bit about how we're thinking about that. So let's start with the what's probably not going to change, right? Because I think that's important, because we can get a little more certainty, a little less ambiguity if we focus on some of that stuff. So I think people are going to travel, right? I think inevitably when we've seen people have more leisure time, which they probably will as AI becomes a more, we saw after the Industrial Revolution and the Digital Revolution, we saw that people had more leisure time. I think with this, we're going to see that again. We're not going to get into the economics of that necessarily, but I do think that's likely going to happen. And so if that assumption is true, people will spend more time traveling and consuming media. I think those
Can I play devil's
entertainment.
advocate
Sure,
and just
100%.
challenge that assumption?
Yeah.
There's been a lot of talk, and in fact, they've started in a couple places in the world the idea of these smart cities where you'll have these 15-mile cities with hundreds of thousands or millions of people that live in that city, and it's meant to have everything in one place, everything someone could need, including a variety of virtual reality functions that would theoretically take the place of some of that travel. If it continues to move in that direction, do you still see travel being as significant of a thing that in the
I
future as
do.
it is today?
Yeah, I do, because I think in our nature we're adventurers. I think we seek adventure. It's in our DNA. And I think there's never been really a consistent time throughout history where humans haven't explored, And so I think even if our basic conveniences are covered, I think especially if, and we'll get into some of the other assumptions I have in a minute, especially if we seek new and novel, which I think is something humans will always do. Travel is the best, most enriching form of that. So I do,
I
I'm
agree.
placing heavily on that travel will continue and probably increase, I think.
And I want to be clear. I agree with you. I want to just kind of make sure we explore the other side. And the other side is that 15 years ago, the way our brains got dopamine was completely different than the way our brains get dopamine today, right? And so, whatever that itch is that travel scratches, my question is, will travel still be the only thing that scratches that itch in the future? And again, I don't necessarily believe that it won't. But I think it's something that we need to consider and explore as we're making assumptions about the future.
So I think there is a, I probably shouldn't have started with this one because there's a big assumption right there that people will travel more, right? But I think, so if the assumption is people have more time, and people will travel more, they'll also spend more time consuming probably entertainment media. Like I think that's what we've seen anytime humans have had. So I think those things I hold to be fairly self-evident. I think Where there's less ambiguity, though, is things, powerful tools like word of mouth, although the format, the forum may shift, I think word of mouth is going to continue to be one of the most compelling forms of motivation, right? And so that doesn't necessarily mean physically transferring through our mouth holes from one to another, right? But it does mean that people will trust someone or something and receive recommendations from them that will be more influential than anything we can ever do as a brand, right? Is that, you agree with that one?
I agree with that one.
I also think the psychological hacks of the human brain that have been tried and tested throughout humanity by marketers that are powerful motivators in addition to word of mouth. I think one of them is fear of missing out. I think by nature, humans want to be a part of something that someone else has done. I think social proof as a psychological hack of, which is the phenomenon of if someone else has done something, especially if that's someone trusted, that's a derivative of word of mouth in a way, right? But if someone else has done something, even if they don't explicitly communicate to you, but it's more of a passive communication, you're more likely to do it, right? I think social proof is going to be a valuable. And then I think one of the other assumptions where I don't think we as destination marketers have really played enough in the sandbox is humans will always seek community. They'll always seek belonging. They'll always seek tribalism, right? I think that's inherent in human nature. At least it's manifested throughout the history of humanity, and we've seen it manifest in not so positive ways sometimes, right? So, but I think people will want to belong to something, and they'll want to feel special. They'll want to feel recognized. They'll want to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, but also that they're special and unique at the same time. So I think to me, those are assumptions that we're making.
With that final assumption, I think it's really interesting because, if you look at the different types of communities that exist, the family unit, obviously from the beginning of time, has seemed like the strongest. I would say, I'm looking at a macro level. Obviously, there's exceptions, right? But the strongest individual level of community is the family unit, right? And then it kind of spreads out from there. And so, if you think about the most intense connection to a community being the family unit, and then maybe like a neighborhood, and then so on and so forth. I think understanding the levels of community that you have the ability to infiltrate, I think is really important. And so I think mapping the different levels of community and where a brand or an organization or a destination can enter that level of community. I don't know. That's an examination I haven't fully explored that just as you're describing that assumption, it felt like something that needs to be explored.
And I think it's we're learning about that, right? Because I think the internet has turned that on its head a little bit, because community used to be very geographically tethered, right? From the closest ties were the family unit, and it went out geographically, and from your household to your community to your maybe your state, your country, your world, right? I think it was very much like that. But you also had communities around interests and sports clubs and other things, right? But I think the internet has changed that a little bit. And I think that's been one of the struggles society's gone through, and we've seen over the last, 10 or so years, is people's communities have been defined by different areas of intersectionality and other stuff, right? So, and it's not geographically bound anymore. So I do think we've got to think about that. Let's put a pin in that, because I want to come back to community in a second. But the final one that I think is not going to change is convenience. Consumers, by nature, en masse, tend to be lazy and tend to take the path of least resistance. And so frictionless experiences are going to be imperative. And so, how do we make it as convenient as possible for people to do the things they want to do? Right. So, those are some things. And I would go back and say, I missed this one, but when we're talking about people will travel, they'll also seek unique experiences. I think that's part of that one, right? So these are some of the assumptions. There's probably more. I'd love to hear from the audience that are listening. Like, what are some other things that are not going to change? We obviously haven't been comprehensive, but those are some of the big ones that I think I'm thinking about. How do we take that and make a plan from it? So are there any others off the top of your head that you would think of hearing this for the first
Well,
time?
I would just say if we're looking at human behavior from the beginning of time, how it's paced with innovation, the rate of change in consumer behavior has continued to accelerate
Oh,
over
yeah.
time, and that acceleration is going to continue. So, I mean, what I mean by that is if we're looking, saying, okay, in 10 years, based on what we're seeing now in consumer behavior, this is where we believe things are going to go. I would say that 10-year timeline needs to shorten to 3,
Yeah.
and we can't see as far over the hedge as we could in the past.
Yeah, for sure. So Atlas Obscura. No, that's not who it was. I've been working with them on a project. OpenAI came out with a statement a couple of weeks ago that said in the next 2 to 3 years, they think they'll crack AGI. We talked about this on the podcast last week, right? And if that happens, if they get artificial general intelligence, our society is going to look more different then, like 2 to 3 years, than we currently look to the 1500s. Right? That's a bold claim. I think it's hyperbolic. At least I hope it's a little hyperbolic. But I think that sh major shift is quite possible. And we're seeing with tools like Manus that we talked about last week that we're getting closer and closer to tools that can just do a lot more for us, right? And so I agree. I think the acceleration is going to continue. I don't think it's going to slow down. So what do we do about it, right? And I'm going to talk a little bit about Nintendo because, as those watching can tell, I'm a huge Nintendo fan. There's a little Mario Lego set and a Nintendo the same system Lego set and some amiibo in my background. And so, Nintendo is one of my favorite brands of all time. They've done a really good job owning me as a consumer. And the brand is to me is not about like the names or the taglines or anything. It's about the sum. You've talked about this, you wrote a book about this, of all the touch points, right? And we've talked a lot about how a brand is the sum of not just the touch points, but it's the net effect of those touch points. So when someone has an expectation, the experience that they have is either slightly above, slightly below, or right on the money of that. And you add all those accumulative things up, that's to me what the brand is. And Nintendo consistently over time have delivered a fun value experience for me that has just meant that I'm very brand loyal. I'm fanatical about them. And so
I want to just add that over time, since I wrote that book, I've evolved a little bit because it's not just the sum of all the touch points, but it's the resulting feeling for the consumer about your organization from those touch points. Anyway, I want to make sure that all the
and
audience hears that.
that sum is measured is a measurement of the gap between the expectations and the experience, right? Would you say? And so Nintendo's done a phenomenal job. And I've been thinking a lot. I'm going to take a little side journey here. I've been thinking a lot about an essay that was written about 10, 15 years ago called 100 True Fans or 1,000 True Fans. Do you remember that article?
I do.
And the premise was you don't have to go look and sell to everyone. You just need to try to find 1,000 true fans of your brand and sell to them. And if you're an individual, say, and it was written really for content creators. If you're a content creator and you can get 1,000 people to give you $100 a year for whatever you're doing, you're now making $100,000 a year, right? And that's the premise of instead of focusing on the lowest common denominator, focus on the highest common denominator, the people that are fanatical about you. And for a brand like Myrtle Beach, I think we have those. I don't think every destination can claim that, right? But I think for Myrtle Beach, I know that when I post anything on social media, it could just be an ocean wave, right? A video of an ocean wave. I'm going to get a percentage of people on social media that are just going to say, I love Myrtle Beach. I'm not asking them to say anything. They're proactively volunteering this information. They're saying, I'm going to be there in 10 days, or I was just there in July, or that's my happy place. Like I've got a captive audience of fanatical people or destination devotees, let's call them, right? People that are really committed to Myrtle Beach, and Myrtle Beach is more part of their DNA than it is a destination.
They're your true fans.
They're my true fans, right? And I've got more than 1,000 of them. So I'm thinking a lot about how do we create for them? What is the experience that they're looking for? And if I create an experience for them, will that create gravity, especially in a new world order where I can't just spray and pray anymore? If I create an experience for the 1,000 true fans, that is
I'm starting to
ex
connect the dots with where you're headed.
so if I create that experience, then it creates gravity and community and awareness and all the other things, and I start turning those thousand true fans into my advocates, into my secret sales force, into the people that are promoting me instead of me promoting me, right? And we can talk a little bit about how that manifests, but Nintendo's began to do that. And so there's some pieces that they put together quietly over the years that I don't think people have sort of put together. So it started several years ago when they pulled out of the video game industry used to have a big event called E3. It was like all the new technology was announced at this conference. It was like the South by Southwest for video games. And everyone that was anyone there, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, always unveiled every new console, everything there. And then one year, Nintendo said, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to create our own platform. It's called Nintendo Direct. We're just going to publish a video on YouTube and on our website. And whenever we got something to say, we're going to publish this. And we're going to start during the week of E3, but we're not tied to E3. And so for the past several years, what they've done is they've primed their audience to look for information directly from them. They're not relying on a third party. They built their own
Yep.
communication
Audience
channel,
or
right?
community. Yeah.
The next thing they did was they created a single sign-on Nintendo ID across every platform. If you want to do anything with Nintendo, you have to have a Nintendo account ID, whether it's signing online on the console or downloading one of their apps. It's a single sign-on. So they've created a pretty robust customer data platform, CDP, that's tied to an individual, right? Across everything they do. They've created an owned media empire, right? They had one of the biggest grossing movies a couple of years ago with the Mario movie, but they've also done a lot of other animated stuff. They got mobile apps. They got stuff that's just beyond the video games, right? They've created their own media empire. And more recently, they've started, they've got the eShop, which has disintermediated them from video game stores. So if you download a, and then it's not exclusive to Nintendo, but if you traditionally would buy a video game from a GameStop or, you know, a Best Buy, you can now just go to the console and download it directly to from Nintendo through their eShop. And you don't have, you know, sometimes it's a little cheaper, but either way, Nintendo's getting more money from that. And then recently, they've developed a strategy that is really interesting where they've created more meeting places for people. So they launched an app a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago called Music, where you can download the app on your phone and you can listen to music from all of Nintendo's video games. Oh, and by the way, you need a Nintendo ID to log in. But there's some social components to that. And then when they announced the new console, the Switch 2, a couple of weeks ago, right before that, they announced Nintendo Today, which is a new app, which is a place where they can push information to consumers. And since then, they've made several announcements through that app directly to consumer, knowing that also the media is paying attention to it. And the media is going to, they don't have to put out a press release anymore because the media is now watching their own asset, right? So they've done this really good job of creating this ecosystem where they have their own controlled communities, they're controlling their messaging. They have direct access to the consumer. They know everything about the consumer and they
They
can,
own their data.
they own their data. They own the consumer. They own the purchase. They're fully vertical. They're in the full vertical stack, right? They have the whole supply chain, value chain completely cornered. They don't need anyone else anymore, right? They don't need anyone else. They've isolated themselves from every other platform. Now, do they still spend money on paid media? 100%. Will they always? 100%. But they've really hedged against what the future might be, and they're in control of their own destiny. So what does this look like for a destination, right? That's what we're talking about here. Some people might be interested in Nintendo, but I think more interested in a destination. So before I go into that, any questions on the Nintendo side, like what they've done and
Well, and maybe I'm foreshadowing a bit too much, but I know you had a concern about the steps that they've taken as well, and maybe that's something you want to hit a little bit later, or would you rather touch on that now?
Well, we can do it now. You want to hit the newsarounds? Because I think it's probably a good
The
time.
what?
Oh,
I'm
shoot.
sorry?
So newsarounds, full disclaimer, that's twice I've done that today. Newsarounds was the news segment on my previous podcast, the Fuel Hotel Marketing podcast that I used to do. So if that's just that's not only have I che told you I'm cheating on you today, but I'm also going back to my
Yeah.
ex today. So
In what day of your fast are you on? right now.
Stay zero. I just ate a sandwich right before this. Sorry, Stu's news. But we don't have a jingle today, right? Is that you're on the road?
Stu's News Galaxy 2. Stu's News Interstellar Crew. Sorry, guys, I'm on the wrong computer today and I don't have the jingle downloaded. So you got the Adam Stoker edition today.
Oh, if anyone wants to clip that out, that and turn it into a boomerang, I'm just gonna listen and watch that repeatedly. That's amazing,
Hey,
man.
I'm in. I'm in. I'm
I
going to
didn't
get
know
us
you had
more
that in you.
eyeballs. Oh, tip of the iceberg, Stuart. Yeah, the performances that I'm willing to do, especially for money, is wild.
Well, we're not paying you on this show, but I
Oh
appreciate the
no,
sentiment.
I am seeking crowdfunding for performances in the
They may
future
pay
from
you
our
to not
audience
ever
here.
sing on the show again. I don't know. So the Stu's news today is about Nintendo. So, as I mentioned, they just announced the Switch 2, right? Which is their new successor to the one of the best selling video consoles
Yep.
of all time, video game consoles, the Switch. And you know, they just push stuff out there now, and then they let the world react. They're not really controlling the narrative as much as maybe you would with a press release, although they are sending some press releases too. But the internet has gone balmy because of what they didn't say. So they sort of announced, "Hey, we're gonna have this Switch 2, and pre-orders will start on this date, and it's gonna launch." No, yeah, pre-orders will start here. It's gonna launch here. They didn't say the price in the Nintendo Direct. They talked about a couple of different styles of games they're going to be releasing, or how you can buy games from digital to physical, but they didn't talk about pricing. And so they left these gaps. And because people are used to them pushing information, the internet did the internet thing and just started speculating. And so now it turned a positive narrative into a really negative narrative. Like, there's a lot of people now that after the direct, they found out how much it was going to cost, and they found out some of this other stuff. And so there's just this perception that Nintendo was deceptive with some of this. And then what made it worse is after the fact, because of the tariffs, Nintendo came back and said, "Well, I know we just told you that pre-orders would start here, but in North America, we're actually going to delay it because we're trying to figure out what the tariff implication is." And so a lot of what I would consider their true fans have really turned on them in the last couple of weeks. And it's the narrative is, well, Nintendo was an affordable thing, and because they weren't honest and transparent with the pricing, we think it's too expensive. And da, da, da. The reality is, it's only $50 more than the current OLED model, the current Switch model. So it's not like it's astronomically, but they didn't address it directly. And so I think it really pissed off some of their true fans. They didn't deliver the message to the audience the way the audience wanted. They didn't take into consideration the audience's expectations. They did what they wanted to do. They didn't serve the consumer. And I always talk about, we have to do two things. We have to disrupt by challenging the status quo, and we have to deliver by being obsessed with the customer. And that's an Amazon one of the things they say. So we were, in this case, Nintendo has built the audience, they have the fan, but they didn't do what was in the best interest of the fan, and it's backfired royally on them.
Well, then let me ask you a question. And it's funny because obviously it's been well documented that I'm 100% on the train of build a community. And when you get your community talking to each other and you don't have to be a part of the conversation, that's how you can know that you've kind of built a successful community. But what do you do when you've lost control of the community that you've built? And I think that's a like you can, in theory, create a monster by building a community. And I hope you don't mind me sharing, but in a conversation with Kyle Oland, who runs Play Golf Myrtle Beach, years ago they had created a Facebook group. And I believe that at one point there was an issue with there was people in the group posting negative things about certain courses when they were under construction or something like that. And it kind of freaked everybody out. And they shut down the community. And so this happens. Like, this is not just a Nintendo thing. It's a very real possible side effect of building a community. And I'm wondering, how do you combat that? I mean, what's your solution for Nintendo? You built this community, it started to revolt against you. What do you do?
Well, I think with any crisis, you've got to acknowledge that there's a problem, right? If you made a mistake, acknowledging that is probably step one, and then engaging the community to figure out where you went wrong and maybe righting some of those wrongs. I think they could have avoided this by being a lot more transparent up front, by giving people more direct access and information. I think where they went wrong was they didn't even inform their own team of all the details, right? So there were some questions after the Nintendo Direct that weren't answered. So people started trying to find it out. And so they'd go to a website or look at an interview or reaching out to support, Nintendo support, and they were getting different answers from Nintendo of Europe and Nintendo of America. And so it sort of doubled down. So I think having all your talking points in the narrative down and making sure you communicate that throughout your entire organization is imperative in those situations.
That's the insight, is
Yeah.
if you're going to go to the trouble of creating 1,000 true fans, they better get premium communication, they better get premium experience, they better feel like they're getting value in exchange for being in the inner circle and for giving of their time, giving of their free promotion, giving of their data. You have to reward that. And if you build a community and don't reward that community with some sort of internal value or exclusive value is probably what I should say,
Right.
then you will lose or could lose that community.
Right. And hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, right? Is the phrase that they've used. But I would say
I've never heard that.
you've never heard that phrase? I think
I'm
it's a Shakespearean phrase, right?
I just I was joking that I don't want to jump on that train with you
Okay.
with what you just
But I'm just saying, as someone that's in love with something, right? Male or female, but brand or person. When love turns to disgruntlement, there's a backlash, right? And so I think
Because if
that's
the
a
connection is deeper, the hurt can be deeper too.
100%, right? And so I think that's what Nintendo's experiencing. Now, will they still sell a ton of consoles? Sure, right? And I think this will settle down, but it's just been a PR nightmare because they've missed some basics. They didn't listen to their audience. They didn't include them up front. Like, they're very secret about stuff. And I agree with you. Like, if you have a 1,000 true fans or this community, then they have to feel special. They have to feel like they have ownership over the experience, right? You can't, it's like when you ask people for their opinion and then you completely ignore it. Like, you would have been better off not asking for their opinion in the front side, 'cause you just eroded that relationship. So, yeah, so.
I feel like that's a really good analogy, the Nintendo analogy, and you kind of tease the idea, okay, now we need to explore how do we do it for DMOs. So I think a lot of our audience can kind of infer where you're headed, but let's get really clear. Now applying this principle to DMOs, this idea of 1,000 true fans, addressing the change in the landscape that's taking place, what's your prescription?
Yeah, so I want to go first and foremost and say, I don't know where it's definitely heading, right? But I think I can start to put together a few of the pieces that will help us get to wherever that is, right? So you've heard me talk. I don't know if this audience has heard me talk, but I'm a big fan of the concept of cathedral thinking, right? It's not mine, it's been talked about in the industry before, but the concept of building something from its foundation with a long-term vision in mind, even knowing that you may not ever get to the finish point, certainly within your administration, right? But really having that long-term perspective. We have talked about this on the show before. But what are the, so the question is, what does that look like? And what does it look like if you don't fully know what the finished cathedral is going to look like? You sort of have some rough edges around it, right? So right now, this, the cathedral is, okay, was something related to community, is something related to this 1,000 true fans. It's something that has some entertainment components to it and engagement components. It's not reliant on a traditional website. It's not reliant on traditional media, right? So you can say some of the things that it is not. So what are the foundational elements or the building blocks we need to start building today that will help us get there? Maybe in a year, maybe in 10 years. I don't know, right? But and as we have clarity that comes through new experiences and seeing new patterns, we can adjust as necessary. But what are those foundational pieces that we need, right? Does that make sense?
Can I add kind of a just a caveat there? Because I
Of
think
course.
I can help with that. when I personally am somebody who doesn't suffer a ton from anxiety. Now, I stress about things here or there, but something that my dad taught me that I think has been really valuable for me is if you're controlling what you can control and ignoring the things that are out of your control, you give yourself a much better chance at success. And so I think going into what you're about to explain here, I think we really need to look at what is in the destination's control and what are they unable to control. And I think we really need to examine that as we're deciding where to go from here.
So you're exactly right. And there might be things that right now we don't have control over that, hey, maybe it's in our interest to get our fingers a little more into those areas, right? So the first one of those is the experience in market, right? Like the actual experience. And we're placing one of the bets we're placing on is how do we begin to analyze the experience that people are having more? Because DMOs spend a lot of time in the awareness, consideration, conversion funnel, right? Hate the word, but funnel. We had a whole episode about this where we talked about it's a journey, right? Because right after conversion, there's anticipation, there's the experience. Oh, and guess what? There's an afterglow and then a loyalty loop back to the beginning of consideration. DMOs have to, and this is one of the places, the foundational blocks, we have to start playing in those other areas. We have to start being in the experience piece. We have to start being, especially in the anticipation and the afterglow as well. Like, we've got to collect data, we've got to understand it, and we've got to start to influence it. I think that's one of the foundational blocks. In order to do that, one of the other foundational blocks is we've got to invest heavily in first-party data. We have to figure out all these touch points. If the brand is the sum of the experiences that someone has when they interact, right? That's not just digital, that's physical too. We've got to find ways to collect first-party data on every consumer that's coming to our destination or even researching our destination. Like, we have to do that. So investing in something like a CDP, a customer data platform, is imperative for every DMO moving forward. If you're not already on that train, you got to be. I am shocked that none of the major vendors in the destination have really stepped up in a proper way and said, here's a CDP solution that is going to work for our industry. Like, it doesn't really exist. A couple are dabbling in it, but it's very locked down as their proprietary data. Someone needs to create a solution where a DMO can have their own first-party data that is enriched by the third party, but we can control structure, usage, all that stuff. Like, that the fact that doesn't exist is bewildering, and it means I'm having to go and pay to build one, right? And I don't really love that situation. So we have to invest heavily in first-party data, I think. Some of the other things, this might end up being a two-part episode because we may go a while, but some of the other things is I'm thinking about how, you know, we've already dabbled in branded entertainment, right? We've got a couple of TV shows. I think we're going to have to continue to explore how do we stay relevant at storytelling without selling, right? I think that's another foundational thing that I'm not going to jump into too much in this show because we talked about that a lot. But I think where there's a new pivot for me is on what I would consider atomic content. So more fractional pieces of information that's related. And the reason I say that is I think the website experience of the future is going to be a blend, a hybrid of social, current websites, and conversation, like LLM, conversational AI. Right? I think it's that stuff's going to morph into a single thing. I don't know what that looks like, but in order for that to be a reality, like, so think about it this way. If I'm interested in restaurants in Myrtle Beach, I might go to a page, might go to a search or a conversation or chat or something or a website and indicate somehow that I'm interested in restaurants. And that right now, the paradigm is there's a list of curated restaurants that the DMO has selected, right? And that might be because they're members, it might be because they're the best in the destination. It might not be on a DMO website. It might be on TripAdvisor or Yelp or somewhere that's curated information from other people to inform that. But what's going to happen in the future, and not too distant future, is that consumers not going to accept just a static list. They're going to want to have a little probe in that. They want to have a conversation. They might say, "Well, I'm thinking more upscale restaurants or family-friendly restaurants. And that content's going to have to change based on that consumer's preferences, because I believe the individualization, not personalization, individualization is going to be the key to success in the future, which is why we need a CDP.
Hold on, you just made a clarification that I want to make sure. What in your mind is the difference between personalization and individualization?
I think personalization tends to deal with uses a heuristic of personas or groupings to update content to a swath of people. Okay, they're from this
So
geographic
individualism
region.
is more granular.
Individualism is specific to the person. I think personalization was intended to mean that originally, but I think it's been sort of cannibalized to the point where it's like the word authentic. It doesn't really mean what it used to mean. I don't think that word means what you think it means. So I think it's individualization. And I think it's not just showing them content that we think they want. It's them having a conversation with us to manifest the content that they want, which creates a sub problem, which is how do we make that persistent across multiple sessions? So if I'm using, say, a chat LLM right now, and I say, show me the best restaurants, and then I come back a week from now and say, show me the best restaurants, I'm probably getting two different answers. But that's not going to be acceptable in this scenario, right? So how do we do that? So that's why I'm saying atomic content that's relevant. So I'm going to have to feed the beast, the content machine, and say, here's all the restaurants in my destination. Here's a ton of meta attributes about each of these things, these objects. Here's how they relate to other stuff, from geography to price point to whatever. And then let the LLM of some kind, some AI, help me sort that based on the input from the consumer. But then somehow I have the memory to store that information with that consumer, so it follows them from session to session or platform to platform or stuff like that. Does that make sense? Like,
Yeah, it
that's a
does.
novel idea, right? That's not something anyone's really doing now. We're certainly not. But the idea of really fragmenting your content, rather than writing one blog, which is here's my 10 restaurants, it's writing the holder or the placeholder for a blog about restaurants, and then saying here's 100 restaurants that could be related to this, and based on the consumer's preferences or indications, let's use AI to sort of manifest that. Does that make
Yeah,
sense?
it's true dynamic content that goes all the way down to the individual, as opposed to dynamic content that we create three buckets, and based on which of the three buckets we put them in, it shows them kind of canned content. You're so suggesting taking it a lot further.
And stuff that we wouldn't have been able to do 2 years ago, right? Before generative AI, that wasn't possible. So I think we've got to assume that that's going to be possible, because the LLMs are going to do it. So one of the threats we have is people are just going to use a chatbot, right? They're going to use some kind of AI conversation to do all their planning. Then we're out of the loop. Or these big mammoth conglomerates like an Expedia are going to control the booking soup to nuts, and then we're out of the window, right? So I think we've got to think about how do we stay relevant. I think hyper individualization is one of those ways. I think the other is every DMO is going to have to get further down the value chain. I think every DMO has to get into the transaction. I don't think it's an option anymore. And I know people will say, well, DMOs haven't really historically been successful with transactions. I just don't think it's been done right. I think they've tried to operate more like an OTA, and I don't think that's the right approach. I think you've got to form partnerships with your local hotels, whether you make money on it or not. You've just got to have a frictionless store where people can consume in a traditional transaction now, but eventually in a conversational transaction. I think that's where it's heading, right?
This is where I want to get my friend Mo Parikh on the show from Bandwango, because he believes that every DMO needs to get involved in the transaction side of things, because otherwise they're going to have a difficult time ever demonstrating the value that they need to.
And it's, I mean, I just don't think they'll exist if they're not. And I think it starts with hotels, but it also expands to attractions and things to do and events and other things. Like, we just launched a version one of a booking engine technology on our site as an experiment. And not because we know exactly where that's going to head, but because we know that it's a bet we want to place on that's going to be valuable to us in the future. I think the transaction's going to be super important for us. might have to cheat here and look at some of the notes I scribbled down because I did write a couple. So that frictionless booking, I think, is going to be really important, and I especially think it is going to be conversational more than anything else. And then the other piece of this, there are more, but for sake of time, I'm going to hone in on this one, is going back to this idea of 1,000 true fans. And I fully understand I'm deliberately misinterpreting what the intent of that was, but it sparked an idea in me. The original intent was, how can a content creator produce money from a smaller set of an audience, right? That was the intent of that, or what was authored. But I think the psychology of it is the same. Like, can I create, or should I create, a community that exclusively focuses on those fans in a manner that helps me sell to the non-believers, right? To the folks that aren't the true fans yet. And so that looks like kind of what Nintendo did with Nintendo Today app, right? It looks like, hey, I've got a method, a place where they're choosing to come because they're getting value out of it. It might be news, it might be discounts, it might be other stuff, it might be games and entertainment. We've got to figure out what that is. But a place where people will come and frequent, and that may look kind of like a social platform. It may look like a utility of some kind, I don't know. But it's some kind of club. And in that process, and it might be part of the website, it might be the website, but in that ecosystem, I'm extracting value from them in the form of feedback. So it could be as simple as, the TripAdvisor model, or, a Foursquare model, where it's like I get signals from people that where they've been, what they liked, what they didn't like. I get recommendations from them. I learn about their profile from the CDP, and now I know, okay, you're a single mom that travels with your 4-year-old. Now, when another person who's a single mom traveling with a 4-year-old is asking my AI stuff questions, I'm gonna automatically surface your thoughts and opinions more at a higher rate than someone that's not, right? And so that could be as simple as, when someone comes to the site, we ask them questions, we have them interact with us, and we say, have you stayed here before? Yes or no? Right. And now that's a signal. And then I can start building a profile on that person. It could be as simple as me saying things like, what did you like most about this thing? And now, if I know that's the single mom with a 4-year-old, and she says the thing she liked best about it was this one sentence, when someone else sees this business or this thing to do, and I know they're relevant, then that's going to manifest. So it gives them context. So the word I want everyone to think about as we're talking about this is context. Context is everything, I think, in the future. Like, giving people context on who's saying this, who the source is, how this is relevant to you, what this means for you, how it makes others and you feel. Context, I think, is the next evolution of the web, and at least for DMOs. And so that's a place that I'm betting heavily on, collecting and manifesting data. And it's going to start with the project that you've been working on for us, Adam, with the chatbot, the LLM chatbot that we've been working on. And I don't know if it'll be live by the time this comes out, but it essentially, for the audience, it's a new spin on a conversation where you get to choose your own adventure, you get to choose your own persona that you're interacting with, and from that I'm getting information. So you could chat with Maris the parrot, who is also the star of the children's book we wrote for Sensory Friendly Travel, who is the expert on accessibility in Myrtle Beach. If you choose to talk with her, now I know something about you, and I can begin to personalize and eventually individualize your experience. You may want to talk to Pearl the mermaid. She is more of the romance expert, the couples expert, the more laid back. She's going to know about fine dining and spas and stuff. But you might also want to talk to Rip the pirate, who is the expert on high energy, crazy, high octane travel, right? Or you might want to talk to our little character, Kelpie the starfish, who is the family friendly expert, and actually has the persona of a child and is very excited about everything. But we're beginning to create a curated experience for you as an individual. As you navigate the website, you can interact with the site and the conversation in a unique way that feels good and authentic to you, that's a little more fun, a little more engaging, that makes you want to come back for more. And so I think this is the beginning of a very big shift in how we think about the website, the digital experience overall, in terms of the piece that we control, right? We call it a website today. I don't think it's a website tomorrow, but that's sort of where we're heading, and that's where we're placing bets.
I think what you're describing, Stuart, is a major paradigm shift for the industry. Because if you think about what destinations have done up to this point, it's been we are going as broad as possible so that we can maximize the volume of visitation. And I know we've gotten into more sustainable activities. We've gotten into, well, let's target the type of traveler that's going to leave it in a better way than they found it. Like, I know that we're getting into some of those, but on a grand scale, I would say in large part, we're starting mass external volume and then kind of figuring things out as we get there. If
Right.
we're going this 1,000 true fans route, I think you focus your time, budget, and energy on understanding those 1,000 people in a level of depth that you never have with the volume that you've done before. So, for example, a lot of the surveys and types of research that we've been doing in the past have been anonymized, and we're trying to get a high volume so we can be statistically significant. But if I can identify who the 1,000 highest propensity visitors are, and I can continue to communicate with them on an ongoing basis, and instead of guessing consumer trends, I follow the decision-making trends of the 1,000 true fans who I've already connected with. And then I'm extrapolating what I learned from those 1,000 true fans in more of a mass marketing campaign to inform what branded entertainment projects we're going to be working on to help us decide what the future of the website experience is going to look like. You then now have a two-way relationship with those 1,000 true fans because we're going to give them, exclusive experiences because they're going to help us shape what we're going to do externally. And so it's an inside out method as opposed to an outside in method. And I think that could be a major, major shift in the way destination marketing is done fundamentally.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's right. It's just where we're thinking, right? And I don't know that every destination could do it, right? If you're a once in a lifetime destination, it might be hard. You may have to, instead of think about focusing on the thousand true fans to extract that contextual information, that might have to be locals you turn to. It might have to be someone else. It might have to be your existing social. I don't know. I'll give you a little anecdote to sort of tell you that this isn't a brand new idea or strategy, because we did it sort of by accident about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago when I ran Fuel. And so we had a hotel client. It was in Myrtle Beach that we were doing a website for. And we built a website based on what we as the agency believed was the right target audience. We knew who their customer was. It was sort of a middle of the road, wasn't a fancy property at all. It was very family friendly, very affordable. Real good amenities like water slides, all that fun stuff. So we produced this sort of accessible, fun, energetic website. And then the owner of the hotel, who was not the target audience, kept saying, "I want it more like this. I want it more stylish. I want it more upscale. I want the website." And we got into a pretty heated debate. And I'm a pretty stubborn fella, as you know. And I wouldn't give in, because I knew in my heart that it was the wrong direction. Like we had two designs that we'd done. One was like black background, very nice font, very low image. And then we had this other vibrant, multicolored, exciting, fun thing. Had like an ocean wave at the top. It was fun. And so finally we convinced them, because neither of us were going to give in. They were paying the check and I was too stubborn to give in. I said, "Let us put this to your audience. Let's put it on your Facebook page." And this is early on in Facebook. And they had a few thousand people on there. And we said, "Hey guys, thanks for being a fan of our hotel," right? We knew at that time, because it was early Facebook, everyone that's a fan of the page probably had visited, right? The property. So we said, "Hey, we're working on the new website. Here's two options. Let us know your thoughts. Like, do you prefer one or the other, or what? So we really engaged them. Overwhelmingly, and I wouldn't be telling this story if it didn't end this way, overwhelmingly the more fun, vibrant website was the one that they picked, right? Overwhelming, almost universally. Very, very few people picked the other one. And so the owner came to us and said, "All right, I give in. You're right. We'll do that one." But we didn't end it there. You know, not only did we build the website, but when the website launched, oh, and by the way, we'd send it to the email database too, not just the social. We did it to
Okay.
both close audiences. We told the socials folks, "Hey, if you sign up for our newsletter," and we sent this to the newsletter too, "we're going to give all our fans, because they helped us choose this, when we launched the new website, we said, we're going to give you a discount to a stay as a thank you to you. Now you're part of this exclusive club." Now they've been doing discounts on their emails for forever, right? That's what hotel emails do, is it's just discounts. Wasn't a bigger discount than they'd ever given. But because we cushioned it or presented it as, "This is a special exclusive club, and this is a thank you to you for what you did for us," the sales for that specific deal went through the roof relative to the normal sales, right? This is 15 years ago. So I know this can be effective, right?
Yeah.
If you can join the dots and tell the right story and make people feel the right things, right? Because we're emotional decision makers. All humans are. Whether we rationalize it or not, the decisions are made at a subconscious level, and then we use our logical brain to rationalize the decision we already made. So if we can make this deep emotional connection and affect how people feel, then think, then act, I think we're going to win. That's at least what Myrtle Beach is betting on for the next 5 years. So.
I like it. So I want to, and I know we're close to time, but I want to just, you have $100. These are theoretical dollars, right? And you've got some innovative new strategies that you can try over the next several months. In fact, there's an unending amount. How are you distributing that $100 to give it the most or the highest propensity chance to be a successful endeavor?
Yeah, I mean, I would hedge a little bit. I think the first party data collection is, to me, is probably where I would start. I think you've got to capture data, whether that's as simple as an email address, but more importantly, the entire profile. I think the content. I think, you know, you've heard me say on the show before, content is king, right?
Yeah.
Content is still king. So I would bet heavily on content, but I would be thinking about content a little differently. I don't think we're going to win the battle that's coming by creating generic information about our destination anymore. The LLMs already know all that stuff. They're getting that stuff. It's already in there. We've got to create unique value in our content. We've got to have unique perspectives. We've got to get more niche with our content. We've got to create this atomic content and segment it. Like, I think that's an important part of how we win. Because otherwise, there's a future where no one comes to the DMO website because they can get every piece of generic information they want from the LLMs. So,
Yep.
how do we differentiate ourselves? How do we prove, when I say differentiate, it's something traditionally I've said when a business wants to differentiate itself. I stole this from my buddy Tim Peter, but it's something different that people are willing to pay for, right? Another way to say that would be it's something different that people value, right? So in this case, you've got to provide a unique perspective or context, going back to that word, that the LLM does not have. Context the LLM does not have. And so you got to invest in content. I think you've got to get in the value chain. You've got to figure out the booking piece, you know, and that's not as imperative right now, day one. But I think 5 years from now, any DMO that doesn't dabble in transaction, or at least bring that into their ecosystem somehow, I'm going to question their relevance, you know?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I think where you want to focus most of your energy as you're thinking is the experience the customer's having, the business having,
Yep.
from beginning to end, right? And how do you, as a DMO, get more relevant, not less relevant? Because if you just go with the status quo, every day that passes between now and eternity, you're going to be less relevant every single day from here until eternity. So your job as a CMO of a DMO, or any person within a DMO, your job is to figure out from now until eternity, every day, how do I become a little bit more relevant to the every consumer as an individual tomorrow than I did today. That's our job right now. If we don't
I love
start that
that.
journey today, it may be too late. It really may.
I think one thing that I would add to the places where you would place budget after the conversation we've had today, which I wasn't prepared for and didn't know where you were going to take this, but the light bulb for me that kind of turned on is I would be exploring those exclusive experiences that we can provide to the 1,000 true fans, and then I would document the heck out of it and use that to create the atomic content that you're talking about. And have real people who have real life friends, have those people come have experiences and then and create amazing experiences and showcase those amazing experiences and probably 10x the volume of that from what's happening
Yeah,
right now.
I agree. Yeah, I think. I mean, I think that's definitely where we're thinking we're heading, right? And it's not just content creators and influencers and the people you
No,
typically will
it's
bring
real
in.
people.
It's real people having real experiences. And I think, the adage that we're not the hero of the story, that the consumer's the hero of the story, and that they want to see themselves in the story as the hero, has never been more true than it is today. And so I think we've got to find ways through the storytelling we're doing, through our advertising, to put that consumer at the center of the stories we're telling, not the destination. I think that's going to be more important than ever. The generic information about the destination is now a commodity, right? We were once the source of truth on a destination because it was a generic source of truth. Now that's a universally shared truth, we've got to create our own new source of truth, which is the contextual source of how my destination and the experiences you have in my destination relate to you, the individual Snoop Doggy Adam. That's what we have to do.
I like it. I really feel like if anybody is curious how to make the visitor the hero instead of the destination, go watch Traveling the Spectrum on Peacock because those people are the heroes of the story and the destination is the background, the guide, and I think the execution of that is spot on.
I didn't even pay you to plug that, so thank you. I appreciate
In a roundabout way, you did.
That's probably fair. Well, Adam, man, this has been a good therapy session. I felt like a whole bunch of weight has been lifted off my shoulders now that this is out in the ether. But I would love to get more people involved in this conversation. I kind of feel like I might create a blog post or a LinkedIn post on this thing and post it in conjunction with the episode so people can list it. Because I'm just trying to figure this stuff out. This is really just my thoughts out loud right now. None of this is polished. None of this is really set in stone. And there's a lot of smarter people than me in the industry that I would love to weigh
That's
in
for
on this
sure.
conversation. I mean, many of whom have been on this show, right? So I think this is the start of a conversation, which is what this show was always meant to be, right? It's discourse. It's let's speed this up. Where are we wrong? Where do you agree? Where do you disagree? Like, I'd love to have that conversation. So,
Can we do a part two, where I would like some time to kind of digest this and come back with my analysis of some of this because you've got my wheels turning on a few things. I'm leaving this conversation feeling pretty excited to explore some of the initial thoughts that are floating around in my head.
Awesome. Well, that's good. I mean, that's every conversation should leave you with it, like, as a different person, right? And hopefully you're a slightly different person, and hopefully those listening are slightly different because of this conversation. And so we appreciate you guys listening. If you want to get involved, then you can hit us up. Adam, what's the best way to reach you?
You can reach me, Adam, at thebrandrevolt.com or find me on Tourism IQ.
And then you can reach me at stuart.butler@visitmortalbeach.com, or you can hit me up LinkedIn, or Tourism IQ. But this is the beginning, man. This is the beginning of, I think, a new paradigm for destinations. And I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm super excited to figure it out along with all of our fans. And Adam, we had a little debate on social media on LinkedIn this past week about we need a name. Our fans, right? And it was funny because you and I had some parallel thinking, but I needed the help of a little chat GPT, but we came up with it pretty much the same time with the name Desties, right? So sort of like Desties, because we're all in podcast fans, but destination, and we can call ourselves the Destination, right? So yep. I love it. I think it's great. So until someone comes up with something superior to this or better, we're now the Destination. You listening, watching, a part of the Destination, and you're all our Desties. So we're glad. But Adam, I know you're probably going to take a jab at me right now.
Yes. I mean, I'm really excited that you, armed with ChatGPT, have now reached the point where you can get to the same conclusion that I do. I think it's really powerful to see where the three of us could go.
Yeah. And you know, you've always said that AI is the great equalizer, right? It raises the floor more than it raises the ceiling. So maybe this is proof of concept where now I'm almost as smart as you with AI as you are without. So I appreciate it.
It's fun to give you a hard time about it. Everybody listening knows that's not true, but I sure appreciate the opportunity for the jab.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. Please leave a rating review. We didn't have time to read out any more reviews this week. I haven't even checked to see if we have some, but hopefully by next week.
I thought my mom would give us a new one, but apparently that's a one-time deal.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll have a conversation with her. We'll see what we can come up with. But thank you all for listening. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse. Cool, man.
All right, I got to jump, man. That was fun. I would love to regroup on some of the stuff we talked about today.